And now, Christine Helmer is a professor of German and religious studies at Northwestern University, and this academic year at Boston College, she's the Corcoran Visiting Chair in Christian-Jewish Relations. And this talk is co-sponsored by that center, and thank you, Jim, for being here to help support it. In June of 2017, Professor Helmer was awarded an honorary doctorate in theology from the Faculty of Theology at the University of Helsinki in Finland. Her area of research and teaching specialization is Christian theology from historical, systematic, and constructive perspectives. Her work is focused on German intellectual history with primary interest in the theology of Martin Luther, the philosophy and theology of Friedrich Schleiermacher, and the flourishing scholarship on Luther and on religion in early 20th century Germany, known, as it's written, as the Luther Renaissance, although we can talk if that's a proper term. She's the author of many articles and books, including a book, The Trinity and Martin Luther, and as well as her most recent book, Theology in the End of Doctrine. And as all of you know who are here, we are celebrating or marking, this year, the quincentennial of the Martin Luther's 95 Theses, and there's no better time to be talking about the relevance of Luther in the American context than now. So please join me in welcoming Professor Helmer.
Thank you all so much for having lunch with me and having lunch at the center. I'd like to stand up for my part of the presentation. I'm advised that my presentation should be kept short, 15 to 20 minutes. We do have somebody on the table, Martin Luther, the man of the year, who has about 500 years of reception history. So I will do my very best to stick to just a few salient points. I won't go into details of why this why the hammer is a 19th century addition to this picture, and I'm going to Wittenberg tomorrow actually to participate in a conference called Glaube und Theologie, and my keynote speech will probably entail deconstructing the over significance of the word Glaube in German theology, but the actual 95 theses weren't posted to the door of the Wittenberg Castle Church. They were actually sent as a letter to Albrecht of Mainz. So much of this Luther year, this commemoration, is historically wrong, but that I guess makes for a good story and makes for a lot of lectures on Luther. So I'm going to be talking about Luther in America, which pretty much is going to be fixed on Luther, the way that Luther was imported from Germany into America since the 1950s or since the 1945. I'm not a historian. I'm an intellectual historian, so I'll be looking at the ways in which ideas were transmitted and looking at a particular genealogy of those ideas as they have affected a contemporary Luther research in America. I've got a few labels that I'll be mentioning. One is the linguistic turn, so for those philosophers in the room, this will be a very familiar term. There is a linguistic turn in theology as well, particularly in Lutheran theology of about the 1990s. And we have the Catholic Luther, which is an invention of a particular stream of ecumenically minded theologians with their base at Yale Divinity School. And then we have the Beyond Luther as my third label. So the linguistic turn, as it affected or as it shaped Protestant theology, particularly since World War II. So I have to start my story somewhere, and I don't want to start it in the 16th century, otherwise we'll be here for the next couple of years. I want to start with the reception of Luther in World War II, with particularly as the debates between Protestant theologians, many Lutheran theologians, as Susanna Heschel in this room here has researched, and I'm very much indebted to your scholarship on the reception of Luther among particular Lutheran theologians who were participating in this institute for the eradication of Judaism in the German Christians of the time. So a lot of the Luther in America that we know today as Luther scholars really does have its relative starting point in the co-option of Luther by specific Lutheran theologians who were allied allied in varying degrees with the German Christians, with the Nazis, and their anti-Semitic policies. For example, in America Today, Fortress Press is still publishing the introduction to Luther's theology by Paul Althaus, who was had signed on to the Arian paragraph in the 1930s. So we do have this genealogy of Lutheran theology that is still being received in America today that actually has its roots in Nazi Germany. In 1934, which is my relative starting point, there was a debate between the various theologians, Protestant theologians, in trying to figure out how to combat National Socialism and how to combat the co-option of Luther by the German Christians, by the Deutsche Christen. And we have the kind of winners of this debate to being the Reformed theologians who decided that Jesus Christ was the one Word of God. And I'll show you exactly how this has its implications for Lutheran theologians. So here we have a stamp from the 50th anniversary of the Barmen Declaration. Jesus Christus ist eine Wort Gottes, the one Word of God. Jesus Christ is the one Word of God. Lutherans got off the bus, and they got off this bus because they thought that Jesus Christ, as his critical principle, announced by Barth as a critical wedge against the National Socialists and their particular theology. The Lutheran theologians wanted to have two words of God, the word of law and the word of gospel. The one word is actually two words of God, the word of law that accuses humanity of sin, and the second word of God, the word of the gospel that justifies humans. So here we have a move in Protestant theology that is very much cast in the debates between the German Christians and between the Confessing Church, or among the Reformed theologians and the Lutheran theologians of the 1930s, trying to figure out how to do constructive theology as political resistance. And the debate ends up with the Reformed theologians deciding that there's one word of God and the Lutherans deciding that there are two words of God. And the reason why I'm explaining this genealogy is that Luther in America is absolutely indebted to this particular theological motif that there are two words of God, one of law and one of gospel. And most of my career has been to deconstruct the hegemony of looking at Luther's theology from this particular perspective. I remember once people tweeting while I was lecturing in Helsinki a few years ago and saying, Christine Helmer doesn't think that law and gospel are important in Lutheran theology. I'm like, yes, okay, I think they're much more important things. But law and gospel is a particular motif in Lutheran theology that is significant for North American Lutheran theologians, primarily because of its genealogy. So here we have the main theologian who actually was allied with the National Socialists. He signed on to the Arian paragraph, Werner Ehlert. And the reason why I'm naming Werner Ehlert is because many of the Lutheran theologians from the 1950s went to Germany and studied with Werner Ehlert, learned his theology that distinguished between law and gospel, and brought it back to America. So we have a very distinctive move or kind of export from Germany to America, and it is due to this guy, Werner Ehlert. And there are still, you know, when I give talks among Lutherans, I'll still have a couple of, you know, a couple of tomatoes thrown because some people are really kind of married to this idea that law and gospel is the sort of all-determining hegemonic category for Luther's theology. But Werner Ehlert was the most popular Lutheran theologian in Erlangen after the war, with his very dubious political connections during the war. So American Lutheran theology is very much categorized by these dualisms that are implications of this twofold word of God. We have sinner versus justifying God. We have a God of wrath versus a God of love. We have the hidden God versus the revealed God. So if you look at any standard text in Lutheran theology in America, you'll see that it is shot through with these dualisms. which I have criticized as being very, very problematic. If you have a god of wrath versus a god of love, or hidden versus a god of love, you are dividing metaphysically between two gods, and that makes no metaphysical sense. I have feminist colleagues who have actually looked at the rhetoric of the god of law and compared it to the rhetoric of domestic violence, and have found that those two discourses are actually very, very similar. So there's a kind of abusive connotations with this kind of dualism that is being perpetuated in contemporary Lutheran theology in America. Now my second point, this is a much happier a development in Lutheran theology. Here we have a colleague of mine from the University of Tübingen, Theodor Dieter, who will be receiving the Ratzinger Prize in November. Pope Benedict himself. Here's Theo giving Pope Benedict a copy of one of his books. Theo and I and a Finnish theologian, Risto Saarinen, were working in the 90s on what was called the Catholic Luther, actually trying to deconstruct the ways in which Luther has been received or interpreted through these dualistic lines set out by this, by the kind of German shaping of Lutheran theology, and trying to deconstruct the 50 years of approaches to Luther, and then reconstruct a historical approach to Luther as a late medieval Catholic, trained theologian, ordained Catholic priest, and Augustinian friar. So I won't do a show of hands, but I know you'll all agree with me on this more historically accurate approach to Luther. Theo was also very instrumental in working out the blueprint for the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification, and is part of this circle of, I would say, Luther scholars outside of Germany who have very much tried to work out a metaphysical, a late medieval access to Luther that is also much more in line with showing how indebted Luther was to medieval philosophy. One of this is a beautiful picture of George Limbeck. George Limbeck was an observer to Vatican II in the 1960s. He was very much affected by the kind of ecumenical tenor in specific Catholic circles, and then read a book by Otto Hermann Pesch as well as Heiko Obermann, who actually tried to place Luther in continuity with the traditions from Aquinas and, in the case of Obermann, Beale. So Limbeck's development of a cultural-linguist model of theology, so a new model of theology, was designed to facilitate the ecumenical dialogues between Lutherans and Catholics, which did end up in the signing of the Joint Declaration in 1999. So the kind of Catholic Luther and the emphasis on developing new models for doing theology, theologies of dialogue, as well as for looking at the Catholic Luther for ecumenical purposes, was something that I learned from Professor Limbeck, and then worked out together with Theo Dieter and Risto Saarinen. So the result is that we don't see the Luther with the hammer and the 95 Theses. We see Luther as a late medieval Augustinian friar who is much more philosophically attuned, much more interested in doctrines, traditional doctrines such as Trinity and Christology. He's not just interested in the doctrine of justification. And he's also much more inflected with a mystical sensibility, which he is receiving from Bernard of Clairvaux, Johannes Tauler, and Jean Gerson. So this is the picture of the Catholic Luther that a few of us are trying to promote. And what's very interesting, and this is a little plug for my book, is that this book was published 20 years ago and is now, and now people are actually interested in it 20 years after the fact. So it's being republished in a in an affordable paperback here in America, the Trinity and Martin Luther. So here's a picture of the signing of the Joint Declaration in 1999, the result of the search for the Catholic Luther in the 1990s with Risto, my own work, Lindbeck's, and Teo's work. And now we have Beyond Luther, which is the third section of my talk. How do we move beyond this deconstruction of Luther in America as it is as it was imported from Germany, and what kind of new accesses to Luther do we have after this this approach to the Catholic Luther sort of ended, at least tentatively, with the JDDJ? Well, there are feminist theologians who are working on deconstructing the kind of patriarchal, oppressive, and abusive aspects of Luther's theology. There's a lot about Luther that is wonderful. There's a lot about Luther that is really absolutely horrifying. And there are kind of new approaches to Luther that are appropriating aspects of Luther, but also trying to deconstruct some of the abusive dimensions of that. And Mark Trelstad at PLU, Pacific Lutheran University, has published works along with other feminist Luther scholars in America to show that, or to appropriate Luther for themes of liberation and freedom from oppression. And another work that is absolutely necessary, that was begun by Professor Susanna Heschel and James Stayer from Canada, was to look precisely at the specific appropriation of Luther by Lutheran theologians in Nazi Germany for in support of their own anti-Semitic policies. So there is, and this is part of my research that I'm doing here, that a picture of Luther, one that I think is absolutely central to his own theology, but one that has been sort of marginalized by Luther scholars since the Second World War, is the centrality of his anti-Judaism in his theology. And that access to the centrality of the anti-Judaism has only been seen because of work by Professor Heschel, who has shown that the silence after the war regarding Luther's appropriation by the Nazis was due to sort of German politics and the reception of German politics, but that this research is absolutely necessary to do, so that one can actually look back at the historical sources and see the traditions of anti-Judaism that run right through from the Middle Ages through Luther and then into the modern West. So that is a summary of my presentation. We have current studies taking place in how Lutheran theologians of Nazi Germany were actually using Luther in anti-Semitic ways. We have contemporary Luther scholars who are studying the Catholic Luther, and then some who are, excuse me, that's a spelling mistake, deconstructing the Luther who has been inherited over the past 100 years by looking actually at the Luther Renaissance. So I hope that you have a lot of questions, because Luther is a really exciting figure, and we have 500 years of reception history to discuss as well. Thank you.
Thanks so much.